training edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga. I'm joined again by Paul Hoynes, our Tribe beat writer, just off the plane back from Arizona, where the sun finally came out. So you came back here to Cleveland, Paul. It always works out that way.
Yeah, just in time. Yeah, the weather was tough. And it's not tough by Cleveland standards, but it was chilly. They're right about, it gets cold in the desert at night. It was cold.
Not necessarily cold. The Indians are heating up in terms of signings and additions to the roster still going on. They bring in Tyler Clippard, a veteran reliever, 12-year veteran. They bring him in on a minor league deal. This is a guy who could really slot in and take over that spot right ahead of Brad Hand in the eighth inning, maybe if things work out.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. I think, along the lines of A.J. Cole, Justin Grimm, James Hoyt, Brooks Pounders, Alex Wilson, they've got a bunch of those guys in camp, a veteran type, major league relievers on minor league deals. And, they're very good at this. This is what they excel at, finding under the radar guys with good track records. And I would bet that, at least two or three of those guys that we just went over probably make the club.
And, Clippard's a guy, he's got 60-some major league saves. He's been in the closer's role in the past, but he really fits the profile of a guy who could work that eighth inning, be a setup man, and do a good job, right?
Yeah, he's, they really don't have a setup guy right now, per se. You've got Brad Hand, Francona has said he's going to be the ninth inning guy. There's going to be times when he might, like you use Cody Allen, have to get, if he hasn't pitched, he'll get four outs, maybe five outs. But I don't think he's going to be flipping back and forth like they did with him last year when he was pitching in sixth, seventh, or ninth inning, the eighth. He's going to be the closer, and you're going to need some people in front of him. And Clipper definitely has, the experience. He's saved games. He saved like seven games, I think, last year for Toronto. He's got like a 32 save season, in his resume from Washington. So this guy's been around. He knows how to handle things, and we'll see what he has left, how he shows in spring training.
Right. And, his age is a question mark, obviously. He's 34. Just turned 34, actually, but he's still got that good changeup, the good off-speed stuff. If I'm reading this correctly, his swing and miss rate last year was excellent, was really high. Probably would have been better than most relievers on the Indians in the Indians bullpen last season if they had acquired him, which they could have done last year. He had cleared waivers after the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, this guy last year he goes 4-3, 3.67 ERA, 85 Ks, like you were saying, 23 walks, 68 innings. So he's pitched for like eight different teams. I think he's had two tours with the Yankees. So the guy's been around a little bit, and I think this is the kind of guy Tito likes to work with. I think he's dependable. It looks like his numbers are pretty consistent. And, Francona wants guys that he knows what he's going to get out of. They're going to pitch like, he's got an idea like they're supposed to pitch when they get on the mound. He doesn't want to be surprised. And I think last year he was surprised one too many times.
Right. And in terms of consistency and appearances, there was a streak earlier in his career from 2010 through 2014 when he was an all-star. And actually 2015, 70 appearances a year, every year. So that's what Tito, likes most of all is there's a guy you can run him out there and his arm won't fall off. So does Tyler Clippard answer the questions for the Indians bullpen now? Put that to rest? Are the Indians done making additions, or, is there still a move to come?
I don't know. I mean, they've got 12 non-roster pitchers in camp, and that's a lot. You bring in like about 20 non-roster players now, but they've got 12 pitchers, just pitchers And a bunch of them are veteran guys. You've got 22 other pitchers on the 40-man in camp. So, you know, I think it's either this should be it, or they're going to have to add like three or four more catchers, because I don't know how these guys are going to get all the work in. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to go much beyond this.
All right. Well, moving on, the big news of the week is the signing of Manny Machado. He goes to the San Diego Padres, 10 years, $300 million, which was, you know, which were the numbers that were, you know, thrown out there, expected sort of in that range. How does that impact the free agency, not just of, you know, Bryce Harper, who's probably going to sign for a little bit more than that, you know, sometime soon here, but looking, you know, casting that forward, looking ahead to Francisco Lindor, who becomes a free agent after the 2021 season. You know, what's the number that Manny Machado got say about what Francisco Lindor is going to be able to get?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, Joe. It certainly doesn't hurt Lindor, you know, Lindor's chances. As long as he stays healthy and productive over the next 3 years, I mean, this kid is going to cash in big time. I mean, I think he could get by on $300 million, but I think it's, you know, I mean, him and Machado are kind of different players. You know, Machado, you know, has shown a little more power than consistent power than Lindor. Lindor has just started to come into his own the last 2 years. What, 33 and 38 home runs, I believe, the last two seasons. So if he keeps that pace up, you know, I think, you know, you're basically looking at the same kind of player, very productive. And Lindor he's not the bad boy. You know, he's not kicking Jesus Aguilar going down the first baseline in the NLCS. He's not saying, you know, that he doesn't run hard to first base.
He's not Johnny Hustle, yeah.
Yeah, this is the kid that could be the face of your franchise if he stays healthy. And so I think, you would imagine, you know, given what big-time free agents get, that, you know, Lindor, if all things go like right now, if things stay on course, he's going to make more than $300 million.
He's got to be significantly more than that. What? How much is the smile worth? Because if all things are equal, you're basically adding money because of the smile, right? You're adding money because of the PR, the marketing, and the
franchise. You can sell season tickets around him. You can do just about anything you want. This kid gets it. You know, he's having fun playing baseball. It's not like a job for him, you know. And you know, at least that's the Francisco Lindor we see, you know. And that's all that counts. And, you know, he's good in the clubhouse. You know, the thing that struck me, Joe, you know, he's rehabbing his calf right now. And, you know, so between, you know, drills and stuff when he's working out, he goes out on the field, and you know what? He can't do anything on the field yet, but he watches him take BP. He watches the infielders take ground balls. Then he goes back in and works with the trainers. And I just think, you know, he told Francona he wanted to do that so he doesn't lose touch with his teammates. And I thought that was a cool thing. I thought that, you know, an interesting thing. I don't know if all players do that. Some guys are so, you know, self-absorbed or so pissed off that they're hurt. You know, they're in, you know, that dark cloud is following them all the time. And Lindor's not like that. And, you know, given his personality, and if his talent stays on the same level, that's a hard combination to beat.
Yeah, that did strike me. I saw Tito's comments about that and how he wanted to stay connected to his teammates. And that's got to feel good if you're, you know, Eric Stamets or Yu Chang or any of those guys who are playing shortstop. He's standing right behind you while you're taking those ground balls and talking to you and talking you up. Yeah. And, you know, it just like the bullpen guys who go out and watch each other's, you know, bullpen sessions.
The rotation does that.
That's a very good thing for the culture of the team, I think. And, you know, Lindor continues that, I guess, with the position players. That's excellent.
Yeah, and I was thinking that maybe, you know, they're kind of getting the Salazar to do that too. And I was wondering – or if organizationally that was something, you know, they kind of missed out on last year. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Salazar maybe got a little isolated, and they wanted to, you know, get him back in there and make make sure he felt he was part of the team, and the other guys knew he was part of the team. So, you know, it was interesting.
Well, and we've seen a couple of Instagram posts and social media from Danny Salazar while he's out there. He tried on the new red jerseys. He really likes those. He's sort of little things like that. Nothing really significant, but just the fact that he's, you know, wants to remind fans, hey, I'm still here. That's important too.
Yeah. And you know, who knows? I mean, he's still not, I think he's playing catch. He's not thrown off the mound yet. They think maybe he'll be ready to pitch a few innings at the end of camp. So we'll see. You know, I mean, last year was a lost cause, and hopefully this guy gets back and is able to help them at some point in the season.
All right. Well, let's jump into some questions, see what the listeners and the readers are talking about, are concerned about here. Submitted to Paul on Twitter, and Paul and myself will answer as many as we can.
Okay, this is from Todd Penn from Brecksville. He wants the Indians to tell Bradley Zimmer about the dangers of concussions. He said concussions have sidelined or taken big chunks out of the careers of Justin Morneau and Joe Mauer, Alex Gordon, and he said Grady Sizemore, but I don't remember Sizemore getting a concussion.
No,
but he said Zimmer needs to be aware of that because of the style of his play in center field is so mm-hmm. aggressive. It was interesting. Yeah,
Grady Sizemore is one who you can point to and say that that style of play, that all out style of play, very similar to what Bradley Zimmer brings you. He talked to us before the Tribe Fest last month, and he mentioned that he's still going to play with that sort of aggressiveness, but he's acutely aware of what injury history he has and what it could do, and he realizes that he needs to be able to stay on the field. I think he did talk about making adjustments, but not necessarily abandoning that all-out style, but making sure that he takes care of himself, once he is able to come back.
Yeah, that's a good point, Joe. When I was talking to him, he kind of reiterated that. He said, he's going to be a little more cautious. He's still going to be the same player, but just be a little smarter. I think when he slammed into the wall of Yankee Stadium, that really shook him up. And I think that's eventually, well, who knows? I'm not a doctor, but, I would think that had a part to do with that shoulder injury too, because he hit that wall so hard. So I think, hopefully, everybody, every outfielder has to learn that. Or, I think even Sizemore kind of dialed it back later. They just, you just can't play like that for 162 games, even though you want to, I think. And Zimmer was saying it killed him, to be hurt and to watch the games, not be able to participate. I mean, this guy lived in Goodyear. I think the minute he rolled out of surgery, he caught a plane to Goodyear and has been there ever since. So I think, I think you live and learn. I think he's, if he's healthy, he's still a great outfielder, defensive outfielder. And we just have to it all depends on how he hits, I think, because defensively he's pretty solid.
Yeah, and you got a chance to see him in the cages out there, and he looks like he's back hitting those great tape measure batting practice balls.
Yeah, he was swinging well. I didn't see him throw. I guess that's maybe probably the last thing to come because he's a right-handed thrower. Then the surgery's on the right shoulder. But he says everything is on target.
All right.
Okay, we got another one here from Antonio Versace.
Nice.
He wants the Tribe to trade Trevor Bauer and a prospect for Giancarlo Stanton. What do you think about that deal, Joe?
Wow. Has there been any inkling that Stanton wants out of, or
Stanton supposedly hasn't played well in New York, and they think some guys can play there, some guys can't.
He almost hit 40 home runs last year.
Yeah,
he hit 100 RBIs and 40 home runs, and yet he didn't play well last. That that's the thing. It's all relative, but if you put his numbers in the middle of the Tribe lineup last year, that's he's you know, one of the top players in baseball, regarded that way. He did strike out a lot last year. Okay.
Yeah.
No, because you'd be trading for Giancarlo Stanton's contract, not Giancarlo Stanton.
Right.
And exactly. There is if they're, you know, nervous about signing Francisco Lindor in a couple of years, you're not going to do it when you're underwater on a Giancarlo Stanton contract that's going to be, you know, going to have several years and many millions of dollars on it. I don't think that's even a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, Stanton would give Antonio the power he wants for the Indians, but like you said, that contract would kill him. There's no way they take
it. Now, I like the idea of trading Trevor Bauer and a prospect for a bat that, you know, bulks up the middle of the lineup. That's a great idea. I think you could get more for Trevor Bauer now than you're going to be able to get for him after he, you know, leads the league in strikeouts and ERA this year and wins his first Cy Young, as he's predicted he's going to do. But we'll get to Trevor Bauer in a few minutes.
We got one more here from Brandon Fisher from Delphus. All teams seem to be preaching financial flexibility with their payrolls. Is there TV money drying up, or is this a form of collusion to keep player salaries down? And do you think a strike or a lockout could be imminent when the agreement runs out in 2022?
Well, you know, before we went on and started the podcast here, you and I were just talking about, you know, the labor situation and the collective bargaining agreement, I believe, is up in 2 years.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
That's the next time there.
3 years left, maybe, yeah.
There's two or three seasons left on that. And just the number of veteran players who have signed minor league deals, it's up close to 100 players now, I believe. You know, there's the top guys are still getting their money and getting their years on their contracts and all that. But it's guys like Tyler Clippard. It's guys like, even like an who were some of the other guys? Like we mentioned Derek Dietrich. He was a veteran guy. You know, those guys who in past years would have been signing major league contracts are getting sort of these 1 year show me tryout, you know, sort of deals. And the system seems to be a little funky. And he mentioned in their collusion. You know, that's a real tough thing to prove, but it's certainly evident that the ownership is pumping the brakes on handing out these ridiculous contracts that were so prevalent over the previous 10 years.
Yeah, I think, Brandon was asking about, you know, all teams preaching financial flexibility. And I think that comes from all teams kind of measuring the talent of players the same way now. They don't have, the teams have all, you know, adopted the analytics. There's not, you know, there used to be teams that were scout driven. There used to be teams that were, you know, kind of GM driven by the GM's gut and just his feel and his experience. But I think now, you know, all 30 teams are judging players the same way. And that kind of flattens out the salary. I mean, flattens out the payroll. Teams are less likely to take a risk on a guy that, you know, on a veteran guy. You're not that maybe somebody would sign to a 5-year deal, you know, 8-10 years ago. They're not doing that anymore. These guys have to come to camp on a minor league deal.
Blame the Astros. Blame the Astros 100%. They changed the system when they won their World Series. They changed everything by, you know, showing teams that this analytics-based sort of player evaluation is the way to go, and ever since then, that's we've had this situation in terms of free agency.
Yeah, and they're willing to pay younger players. Teams are willing to pay their younger players a lot more money than veterans now. So the system has kind of switched, where it used to be the younger players had to wait their turn to get the free agency to make the big bucks. Now, you know, they're signing. You know, Lindor was signed for $10.5 million. You know, in arbitration instead of going to arbitration. So, I think definitely, you know, some things are going to have to change when the new agreement comes up, maybe before that, but I certainly hope there's no strikes, Joe. There hasn't, there hasn't been a strike, I think, since what, 95, 94?
Right. You know, the 94 season, they lost most of the 94 yeah. season.
The Indians lost a chance to get to the postseason. So I hope, hopefully, you know, cooler heads prevail and they get this thing worked out, because there is nothing worse than a baseball strike. I mean, and I don't think you know, it used to be all you did was talk about when you covered baseball. All you had to be a labor lawyer half the time because they were on strike so much. So hopefully this thing gets worked out and everybody gets compensated as they should.
You know who wants a baseball strike? Who would favor a baseball strike? Would be the Association of American Football.
That's right. Yeah,
they'd love it. That'd be their favorite thing. All right. Well, let's move on from reader questions. Talk about more pleasant things, like Trevor Bauer. of course, this big Sports Illustrated piece comes out earlier this week. Really takes a deep dive on Trevor Bauer. Talks about, you know, stuff that we've already known about Trevor, stuff that we've reported on in the past, and we've talked about it. You know, it basically brings up all the stuff from just him growing up and his training methods and whatnot too. But this one sort of revealed a few things that we didn't know about Trevor's personal life. I guess the big headlines that were made were about his requirements for dating and his relationship standards and whatnot. If you're a young lady who wants to date Trevor Bauer, he has three rules, and you know, one of them is he's gonna, you know, sleep with whoever he wants to, and there's nothing you can do about it. And once he thinks you're getting too attached, there's no commitment and all this. You know, what was your take on just hearing about Trevor's crazy, not so crazy, I don't think, but you know, his approach to dating, I guess.
I don't know, Joe. I haven't been on a date in like 40 years. So I don't know. Trevor is his own guy. I guess he can do whatever he wants. And, you know, when Antonetti talks about Trevor, he says he's very clinical, and that's, I think that's a great adjective. You know, he sees things black and white. There's no gray area. And, more power to him, I guess. But I don't want to discuss his dating habits.
That's, Paul, I 100% agree. I think the only people who might raise an eyebrow, or who should maybe raise an eyebrow after reading that piece and reading Trevor's thoughts on all that, is probably teammates and other ball players, and maybe just other professional athletes in general, because I think a lot of guys operate that way. They just don't publicize it or, tell a reporter, hey, this is how I operate when it comes to women or whatnot. And, the folks on Twitter who are fired up and, calling Trevor Bauer a Neanderthal or a caveman because of his approach, I think they're sort of missing the point. He's just being upfront and telling it how it is, as opposed to, would you rather have, ball player X who lies to you up front and says, oh no, honey, you're the only one for me. And then, has a lady in Kansas City, Minnesota, and Detroit. This would be an instance where Trevor Bauer's honesty might be seen as refreshing, as opposed to, sort of a pain in the rear end. But yeah, we can move on. I'm totally fine.
When Trevor's retired, maybe he'll write another version of Ball 4 or something. Head is still spinning from Trevor's view on his arbitration case. So
we will move on from Trevor and Paul. The end of this week, the Indians open their spring training exhibition schedule. Adam Plutko announced as the starting pitcher for the first game on Saturday. What do we expect from the Indians when they run them out there? Is there an inkling of what the lineup could look like?
I don't think so. I mean, You know, I think they wait till, you know, probably you get to, you know, get to about 20 games in to the exhibition season. Then you kind of start seeing, you know, who Tito might play where. You know, I think, you know, they use a lot of guys. He'll use different guys in the leadoff spot just to get him an extra at bat. You know, and of course, you know, the veterans, you know, will only play two or three innings Saturday. Then you, you know, bring in the shock troops and all the minor league guys. You know, but it's going to be interesting. The thing, you know, who's, you know, just getting all these pitchers work. You know, I would imagine there's going to be some B games. There's going to be some minor league games where, you know, where these guys will be pitching on the backfields. But yeah, it's fun. You know, Bobby DiBiasio, the Indians PR guy, or, you know, vice president now, he always said there's three phases of spring training. The first one is you can't wait to get there. The second one is you can't wait for the games to start. And the third one is you can't wait to get out of there. So we're entering the second phase right now. And the games are fun to watch. You know, you get tired of watching pitchers throw to first base and, you know, outfielders shagging fly balls and hitters hitting in the cage. And a real game is fun, you know. And it's fun for fans because you get to see a lot of different players. You get to see all the kids that you've read about and heard about and watched on YouTube. You get to see them up close and personal, and it's just a fun time. That this is the best, you know, when the games start, you know, the first week, you know, first week or 2 weeks is really, you know, kind of cool.
And you get to see Garth Brooks and Will Ferrell run out there for an inning. It's great fun, right? It's all sorts of that. I think is the most ridiculous aspect of spring training. But all right, Paul, we'll hook up with you again about this time next week, and see what's developed out there in Goodyear. And heck, maybe they might sign a few other minor league contracts and, you know, add a couple more arms. Who knows? Anything could happen right now. But good to talk to you, and we'll catch you again next week.
All right, Joe.